From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the ninth day of September 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office today. So no update of the commodity markets, but I do have some information about combines that I want to go back through with you, and an update of an article that Krista Swanson and Gary Schnittke and the rest of the FarmDoc team posted last week to FarmDoc Daily, where they wrote combines are the largest cost machinery item on most Midwest grain farms, and that as such, periodically evaluating whether owning or outsourcing a combine is prudent, particularly at the point where a combine needs replacement. And they went on to say, to obtain the lowest cost, newer combines must be used on at least 1,500 acres or more per year. We'll hear from Krista Swanson in just a moment about that. And then, because I saw an ad on the local television station for a custom harvester, I called them to talk about that business in East Central Illinois and see how it was going. Oh, and as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk about more paperwork to do from the U.S. government, this time around not from USDA, but from the Census Bureau.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Again, no numbers from the CME Group in Chicago, as I'm out of the office for the afternoon. However, we will talk about combines today a whole lot. We'll start with that article that the FarmDoc Daily team penned and posted to the FarmDoc Daily website last week. Krista Swanson, research specialist at the University of Illinois, was the lead author on the article. I called and asked her just exactly what they were exploring.
Yeah, so we looked at harvest operations, so combines plus grain carts and trucking, kind of the steps, the equipment needed for those processes, and looking at what it, you know, the maybe the acres that it would take to justify ownership versus outsourcing, and then talk through some of the other types of challenges that someone might face if they're looking into outsourcing, and just basically the whole package of considerations that one has in thinking about their equipment line for harvest on their farm.
There had to be just a myriad of things to consider and probably several different answers, I would think, along the way.
Yeah, there definitely is not a one-size-fit-all, and honestly, this article doesn't even touch some of the other considerations that a person might have. This kind of just focuses really on getting the task done and doesn't really go beyond that, but of course, there are, some farms might have plans to do their own fall field work after harvest. And, so then there's added desire to get harvest done in a timely manner. I mean, everyone wants to get harvest done in a timely manner. But, if you have plans for those types of things later in the fall, before the end of the year, then, you have some of those. So this article doesn't even get into some of those types of things. It's really just looking at it uses the FarmDoc machinery use as economic costs and kind of compares those to Iowa State does a survey of custom operators and people who hire custom operators. And so that's importantly, that's different than the FarmDoc machinery use economic costs. The FarmDoc costs are intended to truly represent the actual cost to operate that machinery. So looking at overhead and depreciation and interest and labor and those factors, whereas the Iowa State rates are actual rates being charged or paid in the current year. So it kind of gives you this comparison of this is essentially what it's costing me per acre to run my machinery during harvest versus, kind of the range of what custom operators are charging or being paid.
Were there any takeaways from that comparison?
I think that, so a couple takeaways, really the cost, the economic cost of running a combine is very similar. It's right there in the range of the average and median custom rate. So one thing that tells me is that if you have the most important thing in considering a combine is making sure that it's appropriately sized for your acres. And in the article from Tuesday, September 1st, you can find links to more details on that as far as, you know, for how many acres would to keep that economic cost at a flat level, you know, how does that fluctuate depending on the size of combine compared to the acres? So that's kind of one important thing. If you're keeping that in line, then and you have the labor available to do it yourself, then, you know, I think you can completely justify doing it. Smaller farms may want to look into hiring a custom operator or a neighbor. As far as the grain cart, one thing that's interesting on that is that the custom rates were all considerably lower, even the maximum, than the economic cost. However, you know, it's not really all that feasible to, there's custom harvesters, people who do custom combining and stuff, but finding a custom grain cart operator isn't as readily available. So I think that that's something where, again, just making sure that you have the right size for your farm. And then I guess the other thing, talking about grain hauling, really the custom rates and the economic costs on grain hauling are equal. And so that is maybe the simplest thing to outsource if you're short on labor or, you know, that's one thing that I think a lot of farms take into account is that if you're a little short on labor, then that's a good way to get you know, an extra person, and you're not really spending any more money than what it would cost to be doing that yourself. And you've got an extra person. And of course, as with anything, there's some challenges. You know, if you hire a trucking may not be as easy to find if you're wanting to go to your own bin site versus to, you know, another outlet. So it's like I said, no one size fits all approach, just a lot of things to consider. And especially in these times, I think an important thing to evaluate.
Thank you, Krista. Krista Swanson is part of the Farm Doc Daily team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can see the article she and her colleagues penned about the cost of harvest on the Farm Doc website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And we're now joined by Matt Berkey. He operates On Track Farming out of Foosland, Illinois, in Champaign County. Thanks so much, Matt, for being with us. Yours is a custom farming operation, mostly, I think, custom harvesting operation, and that's what I would like to talk about. But you also farm in the area. I do want to talk about the custom farming side, because University of Illinois Extension last week posted to the Farm Doc Daily website a comparison of, you know, what a producer might need and want to do when thinking about replacing a combine, the smaller acreage they run. And frankly, they said 1,500 or more to have a combine, especially a new one.
Sure.
What was kind of where they put in a bright line. However, you're in the business of helping farmers and others get through the operation in the fall. Sometimes, like last year, I suppose, Matt, when we had a really rough year and you come in with, I assume, all your equipment's on track because you're on track farming so that you can get in and work where other people can. So let's start there. What was last year like for you?
Yeah, typical as of most years. We usually end, you know, I've got some customers that we've done for, you know, 15 plus years that are regulars, and then, you know, a few new ones every year. And then when we finish up around, you know, our normal acres, we usually travel to wherever there's usually somewhere, Illinois or Western Indiana, that has just had a wet fall and, you know, that's struggling there at the end of harvest. And that's usually where we end up for a few weeks then, you know, finishing up in less than ideal conditions.
And you run all track vehicles?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. We run, we run cloth harvesters. And we've worked with them since 1998. We've done a lot of prototype work with them and whatnot. So you know, all on tracks, carts and tractors on tracks as well. And, you know, they have their downfalls at times, but we can go through a lot of stuff that tire machines can't. So,
and if people are interested in having you come work for them, what's the process like?
Sure. Yeah, it just starts with a phone call and basic information, how many acres of what crop, maybe how, you know, what distance those acres are, from where I'm working, and also from each other, you know, fields, how much travel time and whatnot. And, you know, if it's corn and beans, you know, on days that are rainy or cloudy that we can't be in beans, we can switch to corn, kind of, you know, all that kind of falls into the equation and kind of come up with a price that works, you know. And then we, sometimes they work with a trucking company or hire us as well, you know, and so there's a charge per bushel for the actual hauling from the field to the elevator, depending on distance and whatnot. You know, so there's just a lot of variables that can go into the price.
You're looking, I see, based on the Facebook page for On Track Farming, to hire some semi drivers, looks like, and grain cart operators at the moment too.
Yeah, now I'm all filled up now. Yeah. I've got a pretty good crew every year. Some retired farmers that I actually lease ground from now, they come and run for me, and then I always need a handful of extras. But yeah, I've got all positions filled and ready to roll here this year. So, yep.
Are your services, from the farmer's perspective, pretty cost effective?
I would say so. If, you know, if I wasn't doing custom work, it'd be hard for me to justify, you know, over a certain amount of acres, it's hard to justify the combine and the time and everything involved, the labor, you know, the timeliness. You know, there's times where I almost feel, am I charging enough? You know, it's hard to, you start looking at it from both sides, but with the equipment we run, the cost harvesters, we've got pretty much the absolute best technology in the world, in all of our equipment that we're using. And just the savings of grain loss and grain quality, depending on what machine the farmer was using himself, sometimes just the savings can almost cover per acre charge, you know, of us doing it, let alone the time and all expense they would have. So if guys would put a pencil to it, it might surprise them.
As a landowner or a farmer, how do you deal with the data that's collected and its movement from you to the farmer and
sure
your ability and all those things that about who that belongs to?
Yeah. So, and I know some custom harvesters I've talked to out west, they'll charge an extra fee for mapping and data. I have the technology to do it. I'm doing it on my own acres, and it's really no different to give that to somebody else, obviously. So, you know, some of the farmers or their farm managers want that info. We send it to them in raw data form, you know, and they do with it what they need from there. So the options there in whatever degree they would want. So I don't charge extra for that. It's just kind of today's world now. So
what do you do about producers that have on-farm storage?
Yeah, that can be a challenge at times. So we'll obviously usually just send one machine, you know, so we don't overwhelm or bottleneck there. And a lot of my customers that do on-farm storage that we've done for a few years, they'll start splitting. So we'll start sending so much an hour to the grain setup and so much, you know, an hour to the elevator where they would normally be hauling, you know, X amount of bushels to town anyway. So we'll start splitting it up like that to keep things moving. But it just depends on the distance and, you know, how timely they are about getting trucks turned around. So
how do farmers get hold of you or landowners?
Yeah, cell phone is the easiest. My cell phone number, and carry it with me at all times. So you bet.
All right. That number is 217-781-1253. And you can always find them on Facebook as well. Look for On Track Farming. Hey, thank you. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, and good luck in the field this harvest season.
Hey, yeah, thanks a lot.
Matt Berkey is with On Track Farming. He's in Foosland, Illinois. Every 10 years, the federal government takes a census of the population across the United States. We're now joined by Community and Economic Development Extension Specialist Susan Odom and State Specialist in that area, Zach Kennedy, to discuss exactly what the census is and how it works and why it makes a difference. Susan, I think I'll start with you. Can you give me that background on the census?
Sure. I can outline that for you. Once every decade, the federal government conducts a census of the entire population to count everyone in the United States and record some basic information about them. This information from the census then determines how many representatives each state receives in the U.S. House of Representatives. So if everyone in Illinois isn't counted in the 2020 census, Illinois stands to lose representation in Congress for the next 10 years. Census data is also used to redraw congressional and state legislative district boundaries. So an accurate census count helps us draw maps that represent where people actually live in our state.
Can you outline some of those federal programs that distribute the funds based on the census data?
Sure. Again, I kind of give you a variety from some of the different cabinets. Census data determines funding for wildlife restoration, hunter education and safety programs, and state wildlife grants through the Department of Interior, assistance to firefighter grants through the Department of Homeland Security, weatherization assistance for low-income persons through the Department of Energy, unemployment insurance and dislocated worker programs through the Department of Labor, Title I special education and federal Pell grants through the Department of Education, highway planning and construction grants through the Department of Transportation, funding for the Leakey Underground Storage Tank Trust Fund at EPA, and funding assistance for Illinois Small Business Development Centers through the Small Business Administration. In addition, the Department of Health and Human Services funds Medicare Part B, Medicaid, CHIP, which is the Children's Health Insurance Program, Head Start, and low-income home energy assistance. And at USDA, funded programs include water and waste disposal loan and grant programs, community facility loan and grant programs, cooperative extension, and funding for agricultural experiment stations. In addition, USDA funds a variety of food and nutrition programs, including food commodities through the Emergency Food Assistance Program, the Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program, SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the National School Lunch Program, WIC, which is Women, Infant, and Children's Supplemental Nutrition Program, and the National School Breakfast Program.
Again, we're talking to Susan Odom. She's an extension specialist in Marion, Illinois, in Marion County, about the census, along with Zach Kennedy, who's the state specialist in community and economic development, based here on campus. Zach, I'd like to turn to you now just a little bit for some more information about the census. What's the status in the state of Illinois about the collection of the census?
It's going pretty well, but we still have a little bit of work to do. As of September 6th, the total response rate in Illinois was 92%. And that includes a self-response rate of 70%, or folks who went ahead and either filled out the paper census or went online themselves. And then plus an additional 22% of households that have been counted through the census non-response follow-up. The non-response follow-up is what the census calls the efforts of the field census takers who go door-to-door to collect the census information. Illinois currently ranks 12th amongst all states for total response rate. Illinois, again, is at 92% total response. For comparison, Wisconsin is at 94.5%. Indiana is at 94.4%. Missouri is at 91.7%, and Iowa is at 85%. So we're doing better than two of our nearest neighbors and not quite as well as two of the others. Unfortunately, while self-response rates can be tracked at the county level, the Census Bureau is not publishing data on that total response rate, which includes field collection for political boundaries smaller than states. This makes it a little bit difficult to get a localized view of the census collection efforts, but we can get that overall state view.
So those census takers, they'll be out in the field over the next, few weeks, I suppose, trying to follow up and knocking on doors. Is that right?
Yeah. So between now and the end of the month, the census takers will be making in-person visits to the households who have not yet responded to the census. The census takers will ask the census questions and then they'll record the responses. And we really encourage folks to cooperate with the census field takers should they receive a visit from one of them.
So what about those households that don't self-respond or respond to in the field census taker?
Sure. So households that do not participate either in the self-response or respond to a census field taker, they're going to be enumerated using administrative records. And the primary type of administrative record that will be used are federal tax records from the IRS. However, the Census Bureau has put together a composite of other administrative records as well that includes information from the Centers of Medicaid and Medicare, Housing and Urban Development, the Selective Service System Registration, Social Security Administration, as well as many others. So for the households that do not self-respond or respond through a census taker, the Census Bureau will enumerate those households using these administrative records to assign household counts, composition, and then the other characteristics about individuals living in the household. The use of administrative records this time around in the census is more extensive by design than it has been in the past. Historically, while administrative records were used in most cases, the Census Bureau also did what they called imputation, or they filled in missing data using other statistical methods.
So if the census can use the administrative records to fill in for those households that don't respond, why is there any need to respond at all?
Well, beyond the fact that it's our required duty to respond to the census, it really comes down to a matter of accuracy. So even if the Census Bureau has these sophisticated methods for filling in the missing information for households, an actual count will always be more accurate than estimates created using methods like administrative records. And since representation and funding allocation rely on census data, as Susan talked about, the creation of census data is better not left up to estimation, and it's better done through an actual count.
Bottom line, then, is that the current count is better than an administrative count.
Yeah, getting the actual count of either having somebody respond or having through self-response or through the census field taker will be better than them estimating the characteristics of a household based on administrative records.
And the census takers will be out for how long?
They're going to be out between now and the end of September.
Hey, Zach, thank you so much. And Susan, to you too. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
We've been talking with Zach Kennedy and Susan Odom of Illinois Extension, both in community and economic development, about the 2020 census. If you haven't yet and you'd like to fill out the census, you can do it online still. Just visit census.gov. That's census.gov. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.